session number 17987, reel 1.
Roy Vincent, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Edinburgh.
Which year was this?
1925.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Edinburgh?
No.
Where did you grow up then?
Hull, and then across to Fleetwood and over to Grimsby, mainly Grimsby.
Why did you move to these different fishing ports?
My father was a skipper of trawlers.
And where did you do most of your schooling?
Wellholm Road School in Grimsby.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
Did you get a job?
Almost at once, as a basket maker's apprentice.
So did you spend the war years in Grimsby?
Yes.
Were you in any attacks by the German Air Force in Grimsby?
Yes, I joined the National Fire Service as a messenger. And we worked through the junior firemen, and we were on all the usual fire brigade things.
What specifically do you remember about the bombing in Grimsby?
Being blown off my bike once, and finishing up in a shop doorway.
Do you remember which year that was?
No, I couldn't remember it.
I've interviewed some people who were in Grimsby in the war who told me about butterfly bomb attacks.
That's right.
Do you remember anything about that?
Yes, where we lived there was an old cemetery at the back of us, and butterfly bombs came down, and it's a bomb that expanded with like wings as it came down, and it finished up in trees and things like that, and ran to personnel mainly.
Was that near your home?
Just at the back, over the back wall.
What was your address at that time?
Wintringham Road.
Do you remember the number?
69.
What else do you remember about the butterfly bombs?
Closed the cemetery. And mainly we never bothered with them after that. I don't know when they were cleared.
Did they cause much disruption in the town?
Not specifically. It was mainly our explosive that did the damage.
Did any of your relatives or friends fall casualty to the bombing?
No. We were lucky in that respect.
How did morale hold up amongst the public under the bombing?
Not a great deal of change. Everybody took it for part and parcel of the job, as it were.
Do you remember any of the major buildings or streets in Grimsby that were hit?
The old wooden pontoon was burnt down. That's where we saw rats as big as cats. And the street at the back of where we lived in another time, because when the buzz bombs and that started, not the buzz bombs, the butterfly bombs and that, before then we lived in a place called Hainton Avenue, 203. But after an air raid, the street at the back of us was almost levelled, Henage Road, and my mother decided to get out, so we went to Wintringham Road. I don't know what she was hoping to dodge, but we got the butterfly bombs and that then.
Did any bombs fall near your place of work?
Well, I moved to different places. I was at one station near the big railway yards at the dock station, and another one that way out in what we called Over the Marsh, which is Armstrong Street Way, and in a wood yard. And I did a short time in control at the town hall as a messenger. Then I went out to these different stations when I grew older and whatnot. But none of them really bombed.
So this was a paid job with the fire service, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Not a voluntary
job? No, it was a proper job.
What did you think of the work of the fire service in Grimsby?
I'd always liked being a fireman. I never liked the idea of being a fireman, as you can see. The sight pre-war of the old Thornycroft and Merryweather engines clanging along used to, you know, excite me. Wanted to join, as it were.
But did they do a good job in Grimsby?
I think so, from the equipment they had, yes.
Where did people take shelter from the bombs in Grimsby?
Mainly in the Anderson shelters we've got. There were some street shelters in the places which didn't have gardens, down near the docks. And that was the, I forget what they call them now, brick-built solid shelters in the street. And concreted, you know. And there was also the other shelter, Morrison's shelter, I think it was, like a steel table in the house.
What did people think of the German pilots who were carrying out the bombings?
I don't think I've ever discussed it with them. In regards to men, they were just planes up there dropping stuff on us. I don't think we ever discussed individual killing.
So how did you come to join the army?
When the war finished, at the end of the war, the fire service was obviously cut right down, and all the National Fire Service men went, and they just put the old retained firemen back in. And nothing else to do, there's bags of men coming around, you know. So I thought the only thing to do was join the army. And not having any trade, one thing or another. And then the first time I tried it, I was refused because I had pneumonia scars on my lung, which I got in the fire service. You know, I got soaking wet in the fire service and finished up with double pneumonia. And they refused me on pneumonia scars. A year later I went and they accepted me.
Had you gotten double pneumonia during the war?
In the war, in the fire service, yeah.
Do you remember the occasion when you got that?
I got soaking wet. You know, during the fire, one thing. Because we only used to have the jackets on as messengers. And I was at Station T then, I think it was, as they called it, in the wood mill. And I remember being sat by the stove, and there's one of the fellas noticed I was shivering. And terrible pains in my chest, obviously, round the sides. And he brought me home, and they got the doctor out, and I was in the hospital. And with double pneumonia.
So was the soaking that you got from the water, they were...
I presume it was that, you know.
Was that common for firemen to get pneumonia?
No, the firemen themselves, they were better equipped, you know, they had heavier duty clothes and something like that.
So when was it that you were accepted for the army, do you think?
The dates, I can't give you, 1947.
And where did you do the basic training?
The LTB at Elgin. That's the leader training battalion at Elgin.
What was the basic training like?
Pretty stiff, because it was Scots Guards Sergeant Majors.
Was there any bullying or
None whatsoever.
Did you learn very much in the basic training?
A lot. I had to look after myself for a start. You couldn't go to mum and say, "Can you darn his socks?" You darned them yourself. And you stood on your own 2 feet, obviously. Lots of things. How to keep clean, how to look after your kit. You know, and torture your body beyond what you ever thought you could.
Did you have any idea about any regiment you wanted to join?
Oh, I was going to... now, it may come in handy for you, but when I was a small lad, there was a series of what we call comics, which were reading books. The Wizard, the Hotspur, you remember those?
Yes.
And at one time they published postcards of famous regiments with famous battles. And the Thin Red Line was one. And we know everybody had heard of the Gordon Islanders, Seaforth Islanders, Black Watch. And the Argyll and Sutherland Islanders were new to me. So it was always my ambition to join the Argylls from being a small lad.
And did you get your wish?
Oh, yes. I was an Argyll from day one.
So after the basic training, what happened to you then?
I was posted to Edinburgh, and I went into the demonstration platoon. And we did the ceremonial guards at the castle, Holyrood House, things like that. And also battle demonstrations for colleges, all the recruit depots, things like that, you know, one thing or another. And at that time, the Redford Barracks was the holding battalion for that. It was the headquarters of the Scottish Brigade, the Scottish Division.
How long were you in the demonstration unit for?
Not long enough, because, long enough to say, biggest part of a year. Because I had a very enjoyable Christmas at home, and then to ease the work, the duties of the fellows, the local fellows, we went up to Scotland. You know, we were sent, as we were English, we were sent home for Christmas, and then the Scots were relieved at New Year, so I had the best of both worlds. Then I went down to Warminster. I was posted down to Warminster with six of us. Two Argylls, a Cameron, two Black Watch, I think it was. Yeah, it was that was a lot. I can't remember the other Watch. Two Black Watch, two Argylls, a Cameron. I can't remember the HLI, I think it was. But I'm not sure about him. There were six of us, and we released. We got to know when we arrived there, there were six ATS released. So we were basically ATS replacements as Batman. And that got right up my nose.
Being a Batman?
Being a Batman.
Why didn't you like it?
I didn't want to play nursemaid to some officer. I want to be a soldier. If we released ATS, what kind of a thing do you think we were? And I was never out of trouble. I did 7 days inside, because a sergeant in the King Royal Rifle Corps, who was a mess sergeant, asked me what I thought he was, and being a young idiot, I told him, and he had the last laugh. I finished up 7 days in the guard room.
What did you say to him?
Well, he asked me, I forget, what do you think I am, and I told him.
Was it something rude?
It was something rude. It's not brindable. Because I'm fed up with the whole job. And then I came out of there, and I was posted to general duties, and I went straight to the barrack room, and the first thing I thought of was my kilt. And I got the kilt out of my bag, and I was going to press it. I got a fire bucket from the fire point, and started to press my kilt. And the sergeant major, who was a Durham Light Infantryman, who didn't like Ireland regiments, and he caught me. He said, "Do you know you're on a charge for removing a fire bucket from a fire point," which was just outside the door. I said, "No." He said, "Well, you are." I was on a charge the next morning, but I got off with that, because the it appears that new fire orders had come out in the week I was inside, and I hadn't seen them, so I got off with it. Then when I made Mr. Slim, who was Bill Slim's son, was the Argyll adjutant, but prior to that he'd been a new officer, obviously, and I saw this Argyll officer running, you know, working between the two messes. And I called him and I said, is there any way you can get me to the regiment? And he said, well, you'll only have to apply through channels. So I applied through channels and I kept applying through channels. And eventually I got the posting. From then on, once they realised I was going to the battalion was going to Hong Kong, that sergeant major and they were all as nice as pie. I thought, you two-faced monkeys, you know. But we had one good fellow at Warminster, was the RSM, was a Coldstream Guard. And he used to have his drill parade in the morning, on Saturday morning, everybody spick and span. And he used to go along the men, he'd say, how long have you been in the army? So many years, where's your medal ribbons? You know, and if they hadn't got the medal ribbons, he used to give them something horrible and tell them to have them up the next time he looked at him. And then he'd start the march and he'd stop the parade. He'd say, right, fall out the men in the Highland Division. He said, you're the only soldier on parade. And he used to make us feel very good because there were guardsmen in the ranks with us. So well, we used to fall out gladly, you know. It happened every time, too. And he was a fella that, he said, I'm in the right place, the School of Insanity, he said, because I'm mad. He was a good fella. And from then on, I went to the town at Colchester.
Which battalion was this?
The 1st Battalion.
And which year would this have been?
49. Was it 48? No, 48. Well, a lot had happened to me in that year or so.
And what happened to you at Colchester?
Nothing. I went to see my young brother who was with the battalion. And I said, where have I got a report to money now? He was a Lance Corporal with C Company. He said, oh, come and see the Sergeant Major. So I went to see the Sergeant Major, Sergeant Major Collett. And he said, what's your name? I said, Vincent. He said, I don't want two bloody Vincents in this company. So I said, all right, we'll go and find another company then. So I went to the orderly room and they put me in A Company.
Were you happy in A Company?
Oh, yes, we got in quite well. It's almost, we're on order to go to Hong Kong, and we're down to Southampton with the battalion, you know, a lot of moving money, you know. Empire Trooper waiting for us there, troop ship, a reparations liner from the First World War, which is about as clapped out as some of the wagons we came across later on. And we were supposed to sail one day, and it didn't happen because the boilers were something, no matter what the boilers. So they got the battalion out on the dockside in marching order, and we marched through Southampton. At least the battalion did. I didn't, because I was on what they called the heavy gang, which is a section of A Company. We were there to lift all the heavy stuff about. Stuff from the holds up to the galleys and things like that, you know. And Chief Steele used to call us as the heavy gang. There's also a light anti-aircraft regiment, I think it was, artillery on the ship. I didn't see them do anything, you know. The big highlight was the ship's RSM was a paratrooper. He'd been, according to what I heard, he'd been a RSM of the parachute regiment that revolted in Malaya at the end of the war. The parachute regiment, I believe, they thought they were coming home, and they weren't, they didn't. So everybody got a bit knocked, and he was the RSM of that. And he was the ship's RSM. And our lads, we had 2 days till, I think it was, and we'd been looking forward to, well, not me, because I didn't smoke or I didn't drink. Some of the lads were looking forward to a cheap smoke or a cheap drink. And it didn't come up. They were queued up nicely, all quite happy at the door of the shop or whatever it was. And the RSM came down, the ship's RSM. And I'll do this, I'll do that to you, you know, one or another. So that night, everybody got a tap on the shoulder, get dressed, and get out on the dockside. And the Argyles were in perfect line on the dockside off the boat, and he was threatening with all sorts of things, you know, this idiot. The officers tried and couldn't get her back, but we had an RSM, Big Paddy Morrison, who was the best RSM has ever been, and he just said, right lads, get back aboard, I'll see to it. And the ship's RSM lost his job. I don't know what happened to him, but he lost that cushy job. But when Big Paddy says you do something, you did it. You know, he's a good RSM, very good RSM.
And did he see to the grievance?
Oh, well, because the next day we sailed, it was obvious it didn't work, but when he said he'd see to it, we knew we were on the right, won a winning ticket. Yeah, I often think about Big Paddy.
What do you remember about the voyage?
Well, we left that late. We had the advance party of the Middlesex with us. They were to sail later than us with the Danera. And the Danera passed us in the Mediterranean. Yet we had their advance party on our ship.
What was your ship?
Empire Trooper. We stopped at various places. Well, prior to that, in Southampton, where I told you I was working with a heavy gang, Sergeant McKenzie came around and said, get your gear away. He said, if I see anything out, I'll ditch it through the porthole. So we're looking over the side, as we do, and we saw this pair of boots floating about the water. We're all going laughing. I didn't realise they were mine. So we got to. I was a short pair of boots when I got to Port Said, and everybody went ashore. But you know, wanted to go ashore for a couple of hours, all but me, because I only had sand shoes. My other pair of boots is stowed away. But we had our fun. We had all the bum boats round at Port Said, and that used to be a laugh. We had females on there, you know, married families going out one another on the deck above us. And they used to wave the fellas to come in, you know, show us what they got. One bloke was really filthy with his gyrations on it, you know, flattening his back on the deck. So some of the lads started reaching in a porthole at the back of us, which was a potato store. They started with a wooden chock around the hatch to start with, you know, the cover hatch covers. And he used to call us all Scotch bastards and everything he could, you know, because the Argyles had made a bit of a name of themselves when they left Egypt, you know. And then they started
bombing. What kind of gyrations were these?
Well, like a woman, and, you know, being made love to, as it were, the full bit, you know, and there's women up there, you know. So we didn't like it. Some of the lads started bombing him, as I said. And he called us all the things on us on in better Glasgow voice than I could speak, you know.
But he was an Egyptian from one of the bumboats.
He was an Egyptian on one of the bumboats, yeah. One poor devil, and one of the lads, we ran out of potatoes. So he got this big salt water hose, and he sank one of them. The poor devil had it, totally innocent. His boat was sinking, and there's all these goods floating off the surface of the water, letters and things, you know. But, it was funny, but it can't be very funny for that poor devil. Just on the whale, you know, the things of this idiot.
Anything else you remember about the voyage?
Not really, you know, just the usual ribald comments when you're going through a sewage from men stationed along the banks, you know, about getting your knees brown and things like that. And we went out the Gulf of Doons into the Red Sea. We got a bit heavy weather. It'd been beautiful up to them, a cruise more or less. we started pitching and rolling, and the whole tub could roll. But being, well, not experienced, but knowing what a trawler could do, because when you left the mouth of the Humber, you were up and down side to side all the way along. I used to sleep in the centre of the boat, get near the centre of the boat. You know, as near the centre of the actual ship as you can, you've got less pitching and rolling. Instead of hanging on rails and going up and down like a seesaw, you're hardly moving in the middle. And I was quite happy there. But you see fellas, you know, having kid inspections over the side and nothing other. You know. But that didn't last long. And we got into Colombo, and we got five hackers, I think it was. And there's only one place to go, Naffy Club. And that's a bit of way out of town. We didn't know where it was exactly. Most beautiful place to see from the sea is Colombo, you know, the green and white. But we went up there, we got rickshaws, I think it was four of us, we went up there, and all the blokes wanted five hackers, the guns wanted five hackers. So we thought we were in trouble because all the rickshaw boys started gathering around, you know. With that squad of native of these sailors discharged from the Naffy Club, so all the rickshaw boys backed off, you know. But we finished up, we had nothing to spend, more or less, you know, we couldn't do much. And on the way back, we walked down, and I said to the lads, how much money have we got? Because all down the road there was chaps with big sacks selling coconuts, pineapples and so on. And some of the fellas said, bring back some pineapples and that. And we had enough to buy a big bag. One of the lads said, what do you want this for? I said, do everything I tell you and we'll get all right. So I go up to the fellow with a sack of pineapples. So you got any decent pineapples, John, you know? And I get the fellow to stand with a sack near me. And he said, yeah, so. Let me look at him. Then, I got anything bigger? And he'd go in the sack, something bigger, and I give him to the fellow with the sack. He put him in and moved down the road. And then we went down all the way down, and we finished up with a sack of coconuts and pineapples and stuff. You know. So we thought, well, they can fiddle us, we can fiddle them. You know.
This is at Colombo, is it?
This is at Colombo, yeah. We got aboard with some coconuts and pineapples. The lads were quite pleased. To one to others as you don't buy.
How was a posting to Hong Kong regarded by the troops? Was it regarded as a good posting?
It's hard to say. Hong Kong, needless to say, the British people, they were very low in our estimation, because we went to Stanley Fort, which is on a peninsula the south of the island. And one of our first jobs as A Company was to go to Lantau Island. And there's supposed to be smugglers on there, and gun runners on the island, because the only places on it were two or three small villages. There was a pretty big island, bigger than Hong Kong. And we went there, we landed at a place called Silvermine Bay, and we're trying to put up tents, you know, the six-man IPP tents in a howling gale.